This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. All along the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. A little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour, Representative Tina Fulch is going to join us as Democrat of the day. Patrick, enjoy, my friend. Patrick, in case you missed it, and I didn't say anything about this on Monday because I'm an ass. It's Patrick's birthday was Monday. He has turned 17 years old. Boy, oh boy, the days, I bet you can't wait for your senior year, huh?
Yeah, don't tell Chad I'm working here. He doesn't know I'm only 17.
Oh, you think that radio station owners have morality. Okay, isn't that quaint? Chad, I really like you. That was a cheap joke. My bad, sorry. But I've been in this business for a long time. You're an exception to the rule. Happy birthday. I have bought you delicious cupcakes. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and do not feel like this is, there's no chance of me storming in there and ripping those cupcakes out of your hands or anything like that. But are you okay with an adult giving you, as an adult birthday, a cupcake?
I'm okay with that because, I guess for lack of a better way to put it, I kind of don't share my food with other people, so I don't think I would finish a giant regular size birthday cake. I know you were thinking about one of those 54-inch sheet cakes and just couldn't make it work. But, yeah, the cupcakes are good with me.
Oh, gosh. That's why the last birthday party we had at the station, you were kind of giving everyone an evil leer when they were cutting off slices. How dare you? note to self, bring one cake for Patrick, another cake for everyone else. Gotcha. All right.
And I know if you see me, you'd think, man, he's probably had more than a few 54-inch sheet cakes in his life. But
the last 3 years, I've had a few of those sheet cakes. They're sometimes what gets me through the day. Well, happy birthday. Enjoy that. There's a place in my town, Hopkins, called Amy's that actually makes really nice cupcakes, and I got those there. And the thing is I'm not going to go do the – When the kids were younger, you would go get to like a store. You'd go buy the cupcake design. They'd put a bunch of cupcakes. It was kind of a weak way to do it, if you ask me. They'd put a bunch of cupcakes together, and then they'd draw like a, SpongeBob on top of it. And it'd be like, so if you like one big SpongeBob, it looks like a cake. It's actually a whole bunch of little cakes. And the problem I have with that is that it basically is – it kind of loses its form after a little bit. I mean, it just becomes kind of some sort of Picasso SpongeBob. And I'm of the mindset too. And if you notice those cupcakes there, notice the frosting height on that. That is some height on those frostings, right?
Yeah. And it also, there's a little imprint. So it kind of goes into the cupcake.
Oh yes.
Like
it
it's
does.
Not just, slathered on top like it is with your regular commercial cupcake.
This is called love, people. This is called love. I love these guys. That's exactly right. I got to have that frosting on top. I like when I get a cake and you got like all the flowers on top because what you're about to get is 3 full inches of pure frosting. Mwah! And if it's buttercream, saints be. So I was at the store today. I saw this and it's just, oh, my God. So I grocery shop early on Thursdays or Friday mornings, depending on the week. And if you go in there, what do you see? I see a ton of people coming in, picking up stuff for the office, whether that's cupcakes or donuts or pastries or whatever the case may be, muffins. Tons of people do that. You're bringing it in. It's a Thursday, Friday. Someone's bringing something in so they have something in the office. Today, I'm going through the grocery store. Here comes a fairly attractive young woman. She's got one of those key cards. You know those things, the key cards that are on like the little cable cords that are on your belt?
Yeah.
She's got one of those suckers. So she clearly is from some office. I thought about this a while. She seemed pretty young. Now, I also do understand my perception of age has gotten skewed because I'm now an old man. I'm 53. And so now I kind of look at someone who's 30 and like, oh, look at the kiddies today. You know, and like, I mean, it's kind of blown my perception on that. But I am pretty sure she was in her young to mid-20s. So I'm not thinking she's management. She is there to go get the box of Danishes, cupcakes, but whatever it is, for the office. Here's the thing. She has an arm in a cast. Okay, wait a second. There's an office that had the woman with the cast on the arm go get the box of donuts. Really? Really? Oh, something tells me that executive has no idea what that employee's name really is. What's the over-under on that one? I see that you've got a busted arm there. You know, I twinged my arm when I was over at Pebble Beach the other week, and it was a nightmare. So, samesies. You know, no! Don't do that! That is, I am just, don't be like that, man. Come on. You wonder why people, people don't want to work for certain companies. It's like, I'm sorry. It's if I had a busted arm and they said, hey, Matt, you're on Donut Run tomorrow. I was like, but the arm, we don't care. I'd have chocolate sprinkles. Yeah, that I don't know how much longer I'd be there because, I mean, yeah. Wow. Wow. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is a 25-year-old entrepreneur that basically it's her office, and so she wanted to surprise her staff. Good for them. But still, man, I don't think so. I do not think so. That's just cold. 952-946-6205. So, I wanted to take some time to talk about GOP strategy because – in case you might have missed it, I don't know if they got one right now. I've got some serious doubts whether they've got a strategy going on at this point. It seems to me they're a little bit of a, well, what's the term, mess. And they don't quite know what to do. And I mean, it comes down to this. Now, I don't know. And, of course, hello to the fine folks in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Milwaukee area. Hello, Milwaukee. High life indeed. Devil Radio 92.7 FM Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, and of course here in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950. I don't know in Wisconsin how the Republicans are trying to frame this election, or they were at least trying to frame this election. But in Minnesota, what it was – And I'm going to – this is basically the tone. You'll kind of get the idea. This is what Minnesota Republicans' tone was on the election prior to a few weeks ago. Black people, Minneapolis. Black people, Minneapolis. Crime, crime, guns, crime. Black people, Minneapolis. Black people, Minneapolis. Guns, crime, guns, crime. And it didn't matter where you were at in the state. You have a insane amount of rural white Republicans who rarely, if ever, come into the cities, whose entire campaign is that Minneapolis. We got to rein that city in. Like, I don't quite know. I mean, if they're going to send in some kind of, like, future occupying force military. I don't want to give them any ideas because I kind of tell you the truth. I think some of them want to do that. But it's that is part of it. The other one, of course, is another big part of it was immigration. Another big part of it was gas prices. Problem with that is gas prices have actually been coming down dramatically. And then inflation. But here's an interesting thing about inflation. And this is kind of one of the things that you if you follow inflation in business news, there's a real interesting thing that happened this week with inflation. The earnings started coming out for banks. And the concern they had was with inflation really high, people were not paying down their debt. That's not the case. As a matter of fact, personal savings and paying down debt are actually at almost like a record high. And so that's why earlier this week the stocks were flying high again, because all of a sudden you had a case where, you know, the implications, the inflation wasn't as bad as it was. So those were the four things that they're going to go run with here. The inflation, oh, isn't it bad? Which kind of putters out when you realize most people are actually having their wages keeping up with inflation. Not all the places, but a lot of places are. Gas prices, well, they're going down. And have you noticed all of a sudden all those guys that bought all those stickers for gas pumps, you can put them on your own caboose. How about that one? But the other two were immigration. Caravans! It's a nightmare! I mean, they can't even – the border stuff is interesting because they keep saying stuff like, look at this. Look at all these drugs that were seized at the border. Okay, you do understand what the word seized mean, right? We captured them, right? I don't quite understand what is are you upset they did seize them? Was that your drugs and you're mad? I don't quite know that the whole context of why you're so bothered by the drugs being seized. But yeah, they're so blind there. They don't quite know what to say there. And, of course, that also is a bit of a regional issue because it doesn't really – you know, I know that, you know, racist white people in, like, Indiana, they love it. Ah, the border! Latinos, no! Most places, they don't – that's not a real big issue. I mean, you know, we got the Canadian border, you know. Maybe we get some Tim Hortons coffee. I don't know. It's pretty delicious. Those Timbits, have you had the Timbits? Oh! That is a birthday party surprise for anyone. That is for sure. And then, of course, crime, 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 crime. But you see, it's a little problem for the Republicans. On the way to the election, they decided to try to take away people's rights. And no matter what you think, taking away people's rights usurps all of that. I'll talk more about that when I do return. 952-946-6205. Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Boy, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
If you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride.
The Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday, 952-946-6205. So the Republicans' messaging kind of got blown out of the water when they overturned Roe v. Wade. And as much as Republicans wanted to, okay, you need to understand one thing about Republicans, modern Republicans. Because they immerse themselves in a bubble. They don't realize they're not populism. That most of their issues are indeed fringe and are not exactly mainstream ideas. They're not. I made this joke this morning on social media because in Minnesota, Tom Emmer was one of the few Republicans that voted to enshrine same-sex marriage into national law. He was one of the few Republicans. The other two Republican House members in Minnesota right now voted against it. But he did. And of course, they're going after Emmer. The Republicans are, how dare you do this? And I said, okay, wait a minute here. Tom Emmer voted. And once again, occasionally the blind pig finds a truffle. All right. The guy made the right vote there. Although on the contraception vote, I don't think he did. We'll have to find that out. I don't know what the vote tally layout was that. I'll talk about that a little bit later on. But he basically looks at the numbers. 70 to 75% of this country wants gay marriage to be legal. Let me repeat that number. 70 to 75%. Tom Emmer is and I don't know Tom Emmer's personal story. Maybe he's got gay relatives, or he's got a really good friend who's gay and he just can't bring himself to basically start discriminating against that person or that family member. Fine, whatever the case may be, but he voted against it. He might have just looked at the numbers and said, wow, I'm not going to get on the wrong side of that one. Holy cow. And so he does. And they're all acting as if, why would you vote this way? And these are the same people that when it comes to election time and they get beat, they say, how did we lose? Oh, because you guys push these extremist opinions on people. And don't get me wrong, the media, the news media in this country helps Republicans to the nth degree. They really do. They do whatever they can to basically help because they don't want elections to become landslides. They just don't. They want them to be close because that's more money and that's more, you know, campaign dollars that is going into media. So they will always try to find a way to keep these races close. And so even though there have been plenty of signs since the overturning of Roe v. Wade that the Democrats now are in actually much more of a power position when it comes to the elections, the midterm elections. You know, we talked about 10-point swings. We talked about Nebraska won that special election, which was shockingly close considering that was a 2022-point race. And that was the close races recently. It had been as much as a 40-point race, and it was what, 6 points? You have a dramatic shift in people who say on a generic ballot, and I'm not a big fan of generic ballots because they're generic. Politics is local. That's one of the things that Jeff Stein says, and I agree with it. But one of the things which I think is interesting is you definitely get a just a neutral ballot that the Democrats now are much more the favored party. And the reason why is this, is that you can scream about crime all day long. You can scream about gas prices being high. You can scream about inflation. You can scream about the border. But the reality is you're taking away people's rights. And not a small group. Republicans, this is the problem. You generally stick to trying to limit the rights of Muslims, Jews, minorities. I mean, and before you say to me, oh, that's not true. Yeah, it is. Of course it is. Take a look at your policies over the last 40 years. You have no problem when the individual's got less than porcelain skin color or if they're anything but a Christian of writing bills that basically discriminate against people. And you've not really – you've kind of gotten away with it. And it's been kind of disturbing at how well you guys have been able to get away with it. But with Roe v. Wade being overturned, now all of a sudden you have half the country, half, who now you've said you don't have this right to choose anymore. Me, us, a group of predominantly white elderly men are going to tell you what you can and cannot do with your body. We are going to force you to do things that you don't want to do. And so you can throw up every argument you can about, you know, the crime in Minneapolis or crime in Milwaukee. The reality is that's not going to overrule. Sure, crime might be bad in that city, but you're trying to take away my rights. And so far, it has been interesting to see that the outrage for this overturning of Roe v. Wade seems to actually be sticking around. It is not waning. It is not falling apart. It is not being, you know, drowned out by, ooh, look what's on Netflix now. No, it's not. That this outrage over the overturning of Roe v. Wade has changed the dynamic dramatically. And if this continues, well, I mean, I think a really big bellwether for you guys, everyone out there, watch Minnesota 1. Now, Jim Hagedorn was the Republican congressman down there. He died of cancer. There's a special election on primary night. There's a special election for 1. Minnesota 1 is as much as Republicans have tried to paint this, oh, this is a slam dunk guarantee win for the Republicans. It's Rochester. A lot of eastern Minnesota runs blue. Don't get me wrong, western part of that district over by the South Dakota border, very red indeed. But this is a district that is definitely, it's been held by Democrats recently. Governor Walz was the Democrat that held it recently. It's only a 2 or 3 point usually election. Watch that race. And by the way, they're big on healthcare down there. And watch that race. If that race, if Ettinger, who is the Democrat down there, he's a guy who used to work for Hormel Company down there. If he wins that race and he wins that race handily, you're going to see a panic within the Republican Party that we have not seen in our lifetimes. Probably, well, not since the resignation of Nixon. Not since the resignation of Nixon, because they're going to be looking at that race. And if all of a sudden what was a Republican seat is now handily a Democratic seat, they're going to be frantically trying to find things. And I get – why do I say this? I mean, because once again, this is speculative to a point, and I don't know if speculative is a good thing to wallow in too much. There are numerous things that all of a sudden have come to light in the last 48 hours as far as news across the country that are pointing to Republicans already trying to find some other new issue to take the overturning of Roe v. Wade off the front porch. They're trying desperately to – they're already starting to float the idea that the election is going to be fraudulent. They've already started floating that idea. Yeah, great. And as well, I mean, I'll just go with this one raw story that it just came up. Republicans hoping to flip control of Congress in November elections appear to have decided against campaigning on a unified abortion platform now. That could specifically what the conservatives plan to do once Roe v. Wade was overturned. Now they're all walking away from that saying, no, we don't want to pass that. By the way, they're lying. Do not trust them. Do not trust them at all. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. We'll come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show here on a Thursday.
I need you.
Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, the Shaw and Waukesha, Milwaukee area, and AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Yeah, you got to remember, the Republicans, once again, they went in thinking to themselves, oh, this is going to be a slam dunk. We're going to win back. We're going to win 100 seats in the House. We're going to win 12 seats in the Senate. We're going to take everything back, and we're going to do these things. And now they don't seem to have a message. Now, I'm not trying to help them. Let me just say, for the record here, I'm just more of an observation because I do love to pay attention to politics. So in the last few days, there has all of a sudden become, they're trying to create a new story about Hunter Biden. Oh, once again, does Hunter Biden override you guys taking away people's rights? No, it doesn't. You've had stories that, and we had a story in Minnesota. I know there's a story in Ohio, the story, I believe it was New Mexico, where they're basically, the Republicans are trying to push to basically force recounts before the election, sort of thing. If that's about basically the best way to say it. They've already said, there's no way on the planet we can trust this upcoming election. So you need to count those ballots first and foremost by hand with a chalkboard and a piece of chalk, and that's all you can do. It's
not going well for them.
But that's – what are they doing? They're out there putting forward the argument, guess what? We are already calling the upcoming election fraudulent. That, by the way, is a huge sign the Republicans are in trouble, is that they're all of a sudden – and it's not just here. It's one state. It's across the country. They're already starting to say this upcoming election is fraudulent. If you listen to what they're saying – that tells you what they're telling you exactly what their internal numbers are showing them right now. And their internal numbers, and I've tried to call around a few people I know who have access to Republicans. I have not really been able to confirm everything, but I know that they're very concerned about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And so then, once again, this was supposed to be a reminder. These people, they grew up in a bubble. They believed their own press. They were going to overturn Roe v. Wade, and there was going to be parades, and people are going to come pick them up and put them on their shoulders and march them off into a victorious election. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, no, there's far more people who are really mad about this. And so they're – it is amazing to watch how – ham-handed these guys are when it comes to how they're trying to sell themselves right now. They're usually not this much of a, for lack of a better way to say, cluster. On one side, they don't want to talk about abortion. Some of them don't want to talk about abortion, or they want to try to imply, oh, well, that's one thing that's decided. I mean, by the way, if I can say, if I was a Republican, I talked about this with Stein yesterday. If I was a Republican, what I would be doing right now today is putting forward a social safety net program for pregnant women and newborn kids to basically cover their health care, cover food, shelter, medical needs of the baby, all these things. I would be putting it out there because the way they would sell it is this. You know what? Hey, and if you were really smart Republicans, here's how you do it. You come on out there and you'd say, you know, here's the deal. We're going to actually raise taxes on the richest 1%. We're going to take that money and we're going to actually create a healthcare system for pregnant women in this country that if you don't have insurance, we will cover your entire cost of pregnancy. We will cover the cost of birth. There will not be any charges whatsoever. The baby born, whether you keep it yourself or you give it up for adoption, that will give you a year's worth of medical coverage for that child. And as well, we'll make sure if you are a mom with a newborn baby, you have access to shelter, you have access to food, you have access to quality daycare so you can get back on your career. You do all those things. If they had a brain in their freaking head, that's what they would do, because then at least they would look like they understand what they're doing when they say, we're not going to let you have a choice anymore. But of course, you know, you're also requiring Republicans to have to raise taxes or suggest raising taxes. And at the end of the day, you know, as much as they scream they're pro-life, if that life gets in the way of a tax cut, well, screw that person. That's the Republican Party today. But I mean, it's just one option. I mean, if they did that, I mean, they probably would be able to weather this storm a little bit, but they have no intention of doing that. And even if one Republican, say a Wisconsin Republican, came up and said, here's what we're going to do, the rest of the Republican Party would absolutely destroy the guy or gal. Absolutely would annihilate them. How dare you suggest this? Roe v. Wade is an absolute mess for these guys. Once again, I try not to. I'm going to bring this up not necessarily because of the... because it is a Minnesota politician, you know, Matt Burke, the former Viking football player who's currently running as the lieutenant governor candidate for the Republican Party in Minnesota. He stepped in, and if you didn't catch it, it's been national news. He was speaking to a conference, the National Right to Life Conference, on the day Roe v. Wade was announced, it was overturned. He basically telling women society promotes abortion by telling women they should look a certain way and they should have careers. He basically, you know, gets mad at people who want exceptions for victims of rape or incest because they always go for the rape card. And two wrongs don't make a right, he says. He also likened abortion opponents fight to outlaw the procedure to battle the end slavery. It's not gone over well. He has since somewhat doubled down, and in an insanely stupid way, too, if I can be honest. And what you're seeing with him is something you're seeing across the country. It just is here in Minnesota, as opposed to Wisconsin, where Wisconsin, you've got Republicans there who are going to allow that, what, an 1848 law is going to get enacted over there. Ugh. In Minnesota, we actually had that court case back in the early 90s or late 80s, early 90s, that basically not only guaranteed abortion rights, Roe v. Wade, in the state of Minnesota, it actually extended the rights further because of the state constitution. So, you know, he's basically running against the fact that the state has these rights, which, once again, 60 to 70% of the country want Roe v. Wade to be the law of the land. Burke, he's running mate, lieutenant governor candidate for Republican governor hopeful Scott Jensen's, continue to draw national criticism for a series of controversial remarks he made the day the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade. His comments have drawn rebuke from Governor Walz and the lieutenant governor, Peggy Flanagan, the Democratic opponents to Jensen and Burke. In the recording, Burke, speaking to a National Right to Life Council in Georgia, made a series of contentious remarks that he claims American culture loudly but also stealthily promotes abortion. Two wrongs don't make it a right. He says they're telling women they should look away, they should have careers, all these things. On Tuesday, Walls and Flanagan held a press conference with a number of sexual assault survivors. These disturbing remarks were disrespectful towards the survivors, and the policy is even worse. Flanagan said the Jensen-Burke abortion ban would force survivors to live their lives with their rapist choose them rather than the ones who wanted them for them, they wanted for themselves. Burke responded to the backlash in a video message in which he called Flanagan a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, tried to savage him. Wow. In the remarks he made. Okay, quick side note about Burke himself. That dude cannot get out of his own way. He is just a walking gaffe. And yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that the lieutenant governor candidate on the Democratic side, who's the actual lieutenant governor at this point, is a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, and he uses the word savage. Wow. In defense of his earlier comments, Burke says he thinks women are told to choose between pursuing a career and motherhood. This is where, once again, walking gaffe. Why don't we uplift both of those things? I don't think we promote motherhood enough, Burke said, later accusing Flanagan of purposely mischaracterizing his remarks. No, we all heard them. You said those things, jackass. Here's what Burke said to the lieutenant governor. Aren't you a mother? Isn't it more important than being lieutenant governor? Wow. They can't help themselves. On one side, this issue is toxic for them. But here he is, just bitter, angry Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. How dare you question what I'm saying, sort of thing, you know? And he says to her, what's more important, being a mother or a lieutenant governor? The implication I take away from that statement is Burke is saying you shouldn't be lieutenant governor. You should stay home and be a mom because that's more important than being the lieutenant governor of the state of Minnesota. Wow. By the way, and this is where Burke starts, you know, this has become a little bit, just a smidge of a national story. Burke's comments, which were first criticized in Vanity Fair on Tuesday, well, he showed up on The View today. This is one of who doesn't like that women have careers, said Joy Behar. Newsflash, we already have them, said response Sarah Haynes. And talking to Burke, well, Burke, look around, said Whoopi Goldberg. I'm sure there are women around you. Ask them what they're doing for a living. I'm sure they'd love to tell you. See, this is the problem that they have. And it goes to what Don and Crute were talking yesterday on Devil's Radio in the 5 o'clock hour. It goes to what they were talking about in regards to these votes that they're doing right now where they're trying to enshrine Roe v. Wade, you know, gay marriage, contraception into law. They want to act like, oh, this is just politics. Why do we have to do this? Okay, you guys want to ignore the fact that Justice Thomas, in his ruling to overturn Roe v. Wade, basically begged people to bring up all these rulings that fell under the same category, the individual rights to privacy, that those things all should be brought up because they feel as if states should have the ability to restrict and limit these things. He wants to do it. So there's a reason, there's a very valid reason why the Democrats justifiably are putting these bills forward. But I'm not going to lie. It's absolute beautiful politics. And God willing, if I can be bold to a point, and I'm not rooting against them, I mean, it would be a good thing if you had the Senate, codify Roe v. Wade, codify gay marriage, codify contraception. I think they'll probably codify contraception. I think the senators realize that's such poison that they just don't want anything to do with it. But if they don't codify Roe v. Wade, they don't codify gay marriage, keep bringing it up. Vote over and over and over again. The Republicans themselves have realized this issue is so toxic, they can't really campaign on it. So it's up to the Democrats to keep reminding people of it. But the Republicans themselves, like Burke here, they can't get out of their own way. They're so incensed by the idea that people are questioning their judgment, questioning their decisions. This is a horrible time right now in this country. But if there's something that gives me hope, is that if the Democrats can get focused, get registered, and vote, you could actually have something that hasn't happened since FDR, which is massive overturn to the Democrats in the House and the Senate. Filibuster-proof majorities in the Senate where we can ignore freaking Joe Manchin. Getting such a majority in the House that it's you can allow the clown cars out there to scream all they like. The reality is they're not going to be able to stop anything. That is the important thing. And I think that there is a lot of potential for the Democrats here, but you got to get out and vote because the Republicans are lost right now. They're absolutely lost. And like I said, they're already screaming the election has been fraudulent. That tells you a lot right there. We'll take a break, come back. Biden's got COVID. More on that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show. On the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Like I said, nothing screams to me that the Republicans know they're in trouble already this election cycle, then they're already screaming that the election is fraudulent. In July. Whatever. 952-946-6205. So Joe Biden has tested positive for COVID. He's been fully vaccinated and twice boosted, tested positive Thursday morning, experiencing very mild symptoms. Consistent with CDC guidelines, he will isolate at the White House, will continue to carry out all of his duties fully during that time. As a matter of fact, he released a video statement saying he's got it. And he's saying Paxlovid, following his test results, this antiviral treatment has been found to decrease the risk of COVID hospitalization and death by 89%. Vice President Kamala Harris has similarly prescribed Paxlovid after testing positive of COVID-19 back in April. Biden's symptoms include a runny nose, fatigue, and an occasional dry cough that started Wednesday, said his physician. We need to make sure we're careful here. It's gorgeous today. If you in Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's absolutely gorgeous today. It's 85 degrees, blue skies. It's nice. It's really dry here. But we've had a nice day. We've had a lot of hot days. This has actually been really nice. People are going out. People are doing things. People are hanging out last night. You had the Aquatennial here in Minneapolis. You've got events, holiday events going on, weekend events going on throughout the entire summer. It's out there. I'm going to be taking a flight here fairly soon. Indeed. We cannot get past – I was going to try to get Dr. Joe Eastman. He is my COVID modeling expert, and if you've listened to me up in the Twin Cities, you know who Dr. Joe is. He is an amazing source, an incredibly intelligent person who comes out with these models that show about how COVID is going to spread and how things are looking right now and where they're going to be in the future. And one of the things that's kind of scary is the BA5 variant, which has been pretty intense. There were two variants that came out at the same time, BA4, BA5. BA4 has not been nearly as contagious, but BA5 is very contagious. And the thing which is crazy is that these variants, you know, they are able to get by vaccinations. Now, part of that, by the way, is that the vaccines we've gotten for COVID, because we were so concerned about it and we rushed those. I mean, usually vaccinations take years to approve and go through testing. Because we needed the COVID vaccinations really quick, we kind of rushed them through. And part of the problem is that because we didn't have a longer term model on this, we weren't necessarily able, as the way I've read it, was to develop a vaccine that had the ability to handle other variants. What we are dealing with is a direct variant. So whatever the original, say, Delta variant, we got a Delta vaccine. We were working on a vaccine with Delta, and then came Omicron. And then again, it becomes, you know, BA2 and BA2.1.2.1.2, whatever, and then BA5. And as each one of these variants comes forward, that the vaccines are not as successful. And in some cases, these new variants kind of skip right around them. The new reality, it was Dr. Joe, I was looking, he sent me some new modeling information. He guy sends me stuff all the time, which is kind of cool. He sends me a lot of modeling stuff. He sent me this information, and he says, you know, this is really, it's going to be this long rolling hill, that this is because, you know, no one is really doing anything anymore. No one is wearing masks, or very few people are wearing masks. Very few people are social distancing. Very few people are you know, going out and getting the boosters if they need them, if they're available. A lot of kids are. I will make the correction. Nationally, ever since they opened up vaccination for young kids, that has been very steady. There's been a lot of kids getting in there, especially people, I think, anticipating the school year coming up. But the reality is that for adults, there's a lot of adults out there who aren't vaccinated at all, who think that their gumption and tarnation will be enough to keep that at bay, or they think for some reason it's made up. Still, a million people dead, and they still think, oh, and a million people dead in the United States alone, and, oh, yeah, that's no big deal. That's nothing. Unbelievable. But they're not getting vaccinated. They're not getting boosted. We're not socially distancing. We're kind of acting like pandemic over. And it's not. And we need to be careful, especially as this new variant comes out. Now, I'm not saying we need to go back to, oh, gosh, I mean, the last 2 years. Ugh, I'll say it. Hey, I'm one that believes in science. I believe in doctors. Nurses are freaking angels. Nurses, you're an angel. Doctors, you're angels. Anyone working in the healthcare industry, from the people mopping the floors to the people bringing food up to the patients, you're all freaking angels. You guys are beautiful, and I love you. You guys, I've got your back forever on this because I saw what you guys went through. The reality is that we're not doing what we need to do. We went through all this bad before, and it was so rough, and it was so harsh, and I think people are just so, okay, we're done. And we're not. And I get it. You say to yourself, I don't care. But there's a lot of people out there that do. A lot of people with elderly parents. A lot of people with pre-existing medical conditions. A lot of people with cancer. Where not getting COVID is an important thing. And just people saying, it doesn't matter to me anymore. That's probably not the best path, best course of action. Think about it that way. And I've said before, I've said, you want the real difference? You ever hear a Republican sit there and make the argument, it's like, whatever happened to the good old days of Mayberry, huh? Where we all cared for each other. I can tell you what happened. A bunch of freaking conservatives sat there and said, I'm never wearing a mask. It's a face diaper. I want to go to Chili's and get my jalapeno popper appetizers. You're stopping my freedom. And that I don't remember that episode of Mayberry. I don't remember where Andy, you've been taken over by QAnon and you're just kind of a loon ball. Now, I don't remember that episode. I sound scarily like Barty Fife. That was disturbing for even me. No, the reality is we have to care for each other. When we decided that mild inconvenience was more important than the health and safety of our fellow neighbor, well, that's when we failed. And that's, if there's anything that describes Republican America, that's it right there. Mild inconvenience being a bigger priority than taking care of our fellow human beings. So As Joe Biden has tested positive, may I make the suggestion? If you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated. If you need boosters, get boosters. If you're going to be in large groups with a lot of people around, please wear a mask. Please. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt for life. Devil's Radio starting on some of these stations. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2. That's up next. Hour 2 of the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Good to be with you. By the way, if you missed it during the news break, I showed you one of the cupcakes. I have eaten said cupcake. That is a delicious cupcake. I also have now realized why we have ants in the studio. That's on me. I shouldn't be eating like that. I devour one like Cookie Monster take down cookies. That is not a good cause. We have a ton of news we got to get to. First of all, I should mention that Tina Fulch is going to join us. Democrat of the day, 41B. This is the Hastings area. Definitely going to talk to her. That has been an area that's gotten a lot of less than positive attention the last year. Remember when school board candidates attacked an eight-year-old? I remember that. Thanks, Republicans. Anyway, we'll talk to her coming up here in just a little bit. But we've got a lot of news that's been breaking. First of all, let's go to the trial of Jamal Lindsey Smith. He has been found guilty of first and second degree murder in the Highway 169 road rage shooting of a Crystal father driving his son home from a baseball game last summer. The verdict was reached after 3 days of deliberation spanning 15 hours. Jurors announced their verdict on Thursday afternoon, finding Smith guilty on all three charges, first and second degree murder while committing a drive-by shooting and unlawful possession of a firearm. The first degree murder conviction carries an automatic life sentence. The 34-year-old Chicago man was on trial for killing Twin Cities youth baseball coach Jay Boughton, 56, during a drive-by shooting in Plymouth in July 6. Boughton was driving with his teenage son from a baseball game in Coon Rapids to their Crystal home when he was shot. Boughton's wife, Kristen, knelt in prayer outside the courtroom before the jury was called in to read the verdict. Afterwards, she called her son Harrison and daughter Amelia. Hey, honey, we got him. He's guilty on all three counts. We got him. Judge Nicole Ingish asked the family to wear their poker faces and not make no audible reactions. Some of the dozen family members inside the courtroom pumped their hands in the air when a hearing jury guilty on first-degree murder, one quietly said yes. Smith appeared emotionless, but after the third guilty, he began wiping his face while looking down. After just an hour in the deliberation room, jurors sent a question to the court seeking clarity in the aiding and abetting elements of the murder charges. I would say this. In that case, when they ruled that the conversations that he was having – that were taped in prison where he was trying to basically get witnesses to change their testimony. When they brought that in and that allowed that, I just – that was when I said there's no way this guy's not going to be found guilty. I mean they basically have got – you know, and my guess is – and I haven't heard all the tapes and I haven't read the transcripts of them. But my guess is that the evidence was so strong there that it really didn't give any wiggle room whatsoever on that. So that's a tragic case. Glad they got the guy. Glad that he's going to jail. And that's just that. Another story that is going right now. Former Minneapolis police officer Thomas Lane has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for violating George Floyd's civil rights in a federal case linked to the 2020 incident. The judge sentenced Lane to 30 months in prison on Thursday. According to court records, Lane's attorney Earl Gray had previously requested the sentence to be 27 months. In contrast, prosecutors asked for over 5 years in prison. In February, Lane was found guilty by a jury in the same case. He was originally charged with failing to provide medical care to Floyd while former police officer Derek Chauvin knelt on his neck for more than 9 minutes. In addition, King and Tao were also found guilty of violating Floyd's civil rights. Lane already pled guilty and agreed to a sentence of 3 years in a separate case associated with Floyd's death. King and Tao have a trial scheduled to begin on October 24th regarding the state charges of aiding and abetting second-degree murder and manslaughter. Lane will be officially sentenced to the state case on September 24th. So, I think it's very important. You know, they're all guilty. We've seen the tape. Come on, man. You know, I always kind of get a little bit of a shrug when I hear people say, well, you know, Dan Corden is like, okay, we've got videotape of them murdering the man in the streets. And not just one, but there's multiple tapes, multiple video of them doing it. I'm glad that, you know, he pled guilty. I wish it was a little bit longer. 30 months, even with the guilty pleas, doesn't seem very long. But I got to tell you the truth. I'm very concerned about if Schultz, the Republican, wins the attorney general's race, if cases like this are presented, will he even prosecute? Or will he be running defense for officers that kill people indiscriminately on the streets? I want to go back to Freeman, and I have not been a big fan of Freeman, Hennepin County attorney. And it goes back to the Jamal Clark shooting. And there was more than a few things. I went through that case pretty extensively when it happened. And I really could not find the evidence that Freeman said was there. And the most damning thing from that whole thing, the whole situation, was that the two officers who were being considered for murder charges were able to use their excuses to get out of it. That they said, well, they both said he was, you know, I can't remember. I don't think that was the demon. I think that was the guy down in Missouri. But there's like, I'm ready to die. I'm ready to die. That's what he said. And the guy thought he had his hand on his gun. And so as one guy held him down, the other guy shot him shot him in the head. You can't then allow those two officers' statements to be the excuse to justify the shooting. You just can't do that. The San Diego maneuver. Remember that? That was what that was. The San Diego maneuver. I'm going to do the San Diego maneuver. Ended up killing the guy. And, yeah, it's... I'm very concerned that if a Republican becomes the attorney general in the state of Minnesota, that Republican will not only go on out there and basically try to sue the state into anti-abortion regulations, but will then as well, when an officer is caught red-handed murdering someone in the streets, they'll, well, you know, policing is a tough job. I mean, I'm not going to file charges. We'll wag our fingers at them and tell them, don't do that again. And, yeah, that's it. That's that. Yeah, I think that needs to be much more of an issue in the attorney general's race. The next thing I wanted to bring up, because of, you know, like I said, there's just a ton of news that's breaking this afternoon. The latest COVID figures are out in Minnesota. And this kind of piggybacks on what I was saying at the end of the last hour with Joe Biden being diagnosed with COVID. The latest update shows that COVID-19 cases increased slightly the last 7-day period to a little more than 1,200 cases per day. Deaths remained level, but hospitalizations increased by over the past week. But deaths remain level. Hospitalizations increased over the past week at 16% in the same period. In total, 12,907 Minnesotans have died from COVID-19. The latest numbers show the new positive cases was 8,494. Now, this is for a full week. So basically, on average, 1,213 per day. That's up from 8,023 from last week. Current COVID hospitalizations, 406. 46 of them in ICU, 360 in non-ICU. That's up from 349 last week. So another near 60 more cases there. 35 new deaths. Total deaths, 12,907. The wastewater data shows BA5 comprises 64% of the COVID found in metro wastewater plants as of week July 5th through the 11th. The next wastewater update comes out July 22nd. Overall, the amount of viral load found in the wastewater is nowhere near the extreme high levels Minnesota had during the surge in late 2021, early 2022, but it's still there. And I think we have to be very careful about the, this can get out of control very quickly. Yeah, that the alpha beta, let's see, what was that one? Was that Omicron was the main one then? That was, that was BA2. That was huge. Amazing the amount of spike that was there. So I'll go back to what I said last hour, which is wear a mask. Please wear a mask. In crowded places, you're out by yourself in a boat. I don't think that's a necessity. If you're by yourself walking on a trail, I don't think that that's a necessity. But if you're in a crowded place, it's probably best to start putting one back on. And please get vaccinated. I'm going back to saying what I've said before, which is I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. I just don't. Which brings us back to the other issue. Like I said, there's a lot of breaking news here that's been going on today. I got to get back to the Burke comments. The latest, and I mentioned this last hour, but the latest is, first of all, to say Peggy Flanagan, the lieutenant governor, who is a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, tried to savage him on the remarks he made. Come on. Come on, man. I understand. The Republican Party desperately wants to go back to the times when they said the N-word and giggled about it. And, when someone got upset about this, like, you're uptight. You're the one that's uptight. To try to, to scream at other people to try to basically offset the fact that they're saying something inappropriate that they should not be saying. I get it. That's who you guys are. But come on, man. You can't be doing that. I'm actually stunned at the other comment he made. Aren't you a mother? Isn't that more important than being lieutenant governor? Okay. I know a lot of women who work and work really freaking hard. And including my own wife, by the way, jackass, if I can just say this. And if I may, my wife has been a magnificent mother to my three children. An absolutely magnificent mother. It's not been easy at times. It's been tough. We've been tired. We've been frustrated. There's been some times where there's been fighting, but there's been a lot of times when it's been happy and smiles and the kids are all doing well. And a lot of that has to come down to my wife. She is a great mom, but she is just as well amazing in her job. And I'm not going to say what she does and where she works at, but she does a very good job. She's not an executive level, but she's high up in kind of, the office inner workings. How about I say it like that? And she is magnificent at that. She works hard. She does better than – by far better than – I don't even know how to begin to comprehend what she does. I mean, she is so good at it. And it's a lot of work. She has worked plenty of nights. She has worked plenty of weekends. She is – there are times where she's had to work with younger people. She's had to work with difficult bosses. She has gone out there and she has done it professionally with a smile on her face, and she's done a magnificent job. At no point has my wife ever looked at being a mom and said, oh, that's the second most important thing. She's not done that. She has been able to, like a lot of women, be able to be a loving, caring, supportive, present mother while still being able to hold down a job and do the job really well. So this idea that, you keep kind of implying that careers are bad things for women. And I understand, why don't we up the lift both things? I don't think we promote motherhood enough. So he's talking about careers and motherhood. Why don't we uplift both things? Okay, that's not a bad statement, but then we don't promote motherhood enough, which is okay. And then he makes this comment, and this is just as tone deaf as you get. Aren't you a mother? Isn't that more important than being lieutenant governor? Okay, first of all, jackass, I know Peggy Flanagan. I have interviewed her. I've talked with her for years. I remember, gosh, I think the first time I interviewed her, I had to beg her to come on the air because, you know, she didn't quite know if it was worth her while, and she eventually said yes. And she's a wonderful interview and a fantastic politician, and she cares about the constituents. She cares about the people of the state. She is a wonderful leader. She is a fantastic leader. But I don't think even she, as she is good as she is at lieutenant governor, places that ahead of being a mom. Of course she's a mom. See, that's the problem you have, you large plate of garlic knots. You just don't seem to understand. Women understand this. They don't need it to be mansplained by you, Og. They don't need you to say, oh, I don't know if you're aware or not, but you're a mom and you're working. That seems like a lot of work. Yeah, it is. And they do it pretty damn well. So listen here, you chauvinistic, misogynistic jackass. Shut up. Just shut up. You can't win this. Sure, in your little enclaves of your far-right extremism out in rural Minnesota, fine. You'll find people saying, we know what you meant there, big guy. Oh, we know what you're talking about. But the rest of us, you're an embarrassment to the state at this point. Because you are a walking gaffe. Stop thinking that, thank God you're here to explain being a mom and having a career are difficult. Shut up. And don't you dare judge anyone else's ability to be a parent without knowing who they are. God, you dim-witted bulb. I'd say you're Frankenstein, but dear God, Frankenstein, you went to Harvard? Dude, you went to Harvard? Wow. Just unbelievable. Even Broadcorp is now, yeah, this ticket's unelectable. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Somehow I got frosting all over me. One cupcake. One free. You wonder why I wear t-shirts all the time. I am a mess. I need to be wash and wear. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Is there anything more Republican than a man who thinks he has to explain the importance and the complicated nature of being a mom to women? Is there anything? Oh my God. He is unbelievably, it's just unbelievable how bad he is. It's just, it's unbelievable how bad he is. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Hey, we finally got a financial, I mean, this seems like so, I mean, we got the January 6th thing coming up here tonight, and it sounds like it's going to be a humdinger of a show. But I did want to make sure I took some time here to mention that we finally have gotten some financial numbers from the Tyler Kitchener down in the that second district race. Yeah, that guy. He basically, in case you didn't know, he had not been filing his financial, and this is a basic thing, but it's also something that's kind of a no-brainer that you, this is something you just have to do. And he filed his financial disclosure on Monday, more than 2 months after the deadline, following an ethics complaint filed by his DFL opponent, Angie Craig. Kistner's report required for all members of Congress and candidates under the House ethics rules showed he earned $67,500 between January of last year and May 15th of this year with his consulting firm TC Strategic. By the way, you might need a consulting firm to tell you you need to file your financial report. I'm just you know, someone could consult you on that. He reported $28,000 of that income was earned last year. So wait a second. From January of last year to May, so he earned $28,000? Okay. So then the rest of it he earned this year. Okay. The second time candidate for Congress, Kistner was required to file his latest financial disclosure in May or seek an extension from the House clerk's office. Democrats have been critical of Kistner, who, for reimbursing himself tens of thousands of campaign dollars for mileage in the mostly suburban 2nd District, including nearly $17,000 for mileage in 2021. Campaign finance experts have said his reimbursements are unusually high and raise questions. We've already determined that this would be the equivalent of him driving to Hinckley and back every day. That's the amount of money that he spent on, or he claimed on mileage, to drive in the, just in the 2nd District. Remember, I mean, if he drives, unless he's driving to some sort of, I guess, campaign conference, or I don't know if Republican Party events would qualify, but, you know, there's no way on the planet he's driving that much. Tyler Kistner's personal reimbursement scheme looks shadier than ever, said Craig's campaign manager. Daniels, Kistner said, should complain to his donors why he appears to be using money to line his pockets. His campaign manager, Billy Grant, said Kistner is a regular middle-class candidate whose disclosure looks like most Minnesotans. Grant added that, well, I mean, outside of the fact that, I mean, I when I file my taxes, I got to file them on time. But Patrick, do you have to file your taxes? Is that an important thing for you to make sure that those are filed on time when you file them?
Absolutely.
All right, so you and I are filing our taxes on time. Apparently Tyler is. He thinks that that's what you do. We filed it late. It's a $200 fine. It's not $50,000. It's not a Department of Justice issue. That's what Billy Grant had to say. Come on, man. All right. I'm just okay. Is it the biggest problem? No, but it's like everything political. The second you're not doing something right, the more it all of a sudden starts to appear that, yeah, maybe something's going wrong here. Something might not be above board. How about we say it like that? He does seem like just an absolute, you know, joke. I brought up the Minnesota 1 race in the 3 o'clock hour, and that if that special election, watch it. If Edinger all of a sudden is winning that by 4 or 5 points, this is a really bad sign. And by the way, I said this yesterday about the going up into the 2nd District, or in the 2nd District, the 8th District. We need to get up there and make sure that we're doing what we can to – you know, help make sure that the Jen Schultz, who is the DFL candidate, Representative Jen Schultz, who's the DFL candidate for Minnesota 8, she can win that district. Because now we have Stauber voting against Roe v. Wade, voting against gay marriage, voting against gay marriage. Wow. And voting against contraception. I believe he did. I don't know. I'm going to guess he did.
Yes, we do have the 8, and he was not among them who did vote.
He did not vote for, did any of the Minnesotans, or they all voted against contraception?
No, there were, it was kind of who you, when you look at the list, it's kind of who you would expect voted in favor of contraception of the 8.
Yeah, okay. The people that are really in Democratic seats that are holding them, that they can't go against them. Wow, you voted, Stauber voted against contraception being legal. In all states. He voted against same-sex marriage. He voted against Roe v. Wade. You got to get into these districts. Get down to the Minnesota 1 race. That race is going to be going on until August 9th. That's when the primary is. You got to get down there. You got to help out Ettinger. Win in Minnesota 1. Minnesota 8, you got to get up there. You got to help Jen Schultz win in that district. Door knock, you know, volunteer, donate if you can. And then reminder, too, If you know people in the Minnesota 1 district, if you know people in the Minnesota 8 district, call them, tell them, make sure you're registered to vote, and make sure you vote, especially that 1 district, because that one's coming up. Okay? Okay. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we return, Tina Fulch is going to join us. It is a Democrat of the Day, 41B. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We turn our attention to the Southeast Metro. Our Democrat of the day is running for House seat 41B. Tina Fulch is kind enough to join us to talk about her campaign and what she wants to accomplish down in the Hastings area. Hi, Tina. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad you had some time today. We should mention 41B. This is with the redistricting. This basically is all of Hastings for the most part. I mean, maybe a few houses out of it, but for the most part, it's there. And part of Cottage Grove, Denmark Township. It's a nice little concise area. It seems like redistricting has made it a little bit more of a concise district. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that we lost some of the areas around Afton,
okay,
and which were very rural, and it made it super difficult for door knocking, you know, to get out there because the lots are so large, you know, where they're acres apart. And so, yeah. So from that perspective, as a candidate, it's nicer that it's tighter, more succinct neighborhoods, yes.
So I usually start these interviews out with a real easy one here. Why don't you take some time and tell exactly your story? Who exactly is Tina Fulch?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'm originally here from Hastings, born, raised, graduated. And then after finishing my graduate degree, I ended up moving back into our school district. But I was on the north side of the river, which is in southern Cottage Grove. And so I spent 16 years on that side of the river and decided to move back into town here. And so currently, you know, I am a city council member, have been for the past 6 years, and I really love my community. I'm really well established, busy being on such groups like as our local YMCA and our local chapter of the American Association of Women, University Women, and also I serve on our Dakota County Broadband Board as a director representing our city on that. And so I think that there is, really strong bonds here in our community. And having spent time, you know, living also in Cottage Grove, I have a lot of understanding of the issues that folks are facing on that side of the river as well. I served on their planning commission for three years and have some relationships with their local elected officials currently. And so, yeah, I feel like I'm in a really good position, you know, to have a lot of insights about what the community needs are and who all, you know, a lot of the stakeholders are and how it is that we can work together productively moving forward.
You have been in an interesting position. I mean, Hastings, unfortunately, has not had the best press the last year.
Goodness golly, no.
Right. It's not. And, I mean, now, first of all, I'm going to say this. Hastings is a cute town. I like Hastings. And it was a bit heartbreaking to hear about what had gone on down there. You know, it's one of these opportunities where I think there is a real chance here to say, okay, no, this is not what we are. We're better than this, and we are, you know, we're going to show you what we can do. And it's, you know, there've been more than a few people I've talked to down in the Hastings area that have said that, you know, no, this is Hastings, is not Hastings. Let me show you what Hastings really is.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I think a lot of that was some backlash about from the strides that we have been making locally. We have a group, we're now currently labeled Thrive, and so it's a collaboration between school district, the city, large partners within, you know, our community like the YMCA, you know, businesses and various nonprofit groups and such, and just, you know, just grassroots, just individuals within the community who have come together, and we've been trying to do education about, you know, why diversity, equity, and inclusion are really great things to make our community more welcoming, and through those kinds of educational outreach pieces that we've been doing, you know, it helps build, you know, community capacity and understanding how it is that we can strive to do better and be more welcoming. And so honestly, I think the bad press that we've had in some ways has been, you know, a backlash or a response from a small group of individuals within the community who are, you know, that they don't believe that those values, you know, have a lot of merit, right? You know, where they want to instead, you know, turn things around and have fear mongering and make statements about how it is that we don't want, you know, quote unquote, those people and whoever those people, you know, may be, if it's LGBTQ issues or, you know, not being as, you know, culturally as accepting of others. You know, it is a sad, you know, state of affairs, and it's very troubling. But, you know, by no means is that, you know, the majority of individuals within our town. I mean, we have a lot of pride about lots of folks having, you know, a few generations, you know, of history within the community. And so that's true. But, you know, for the most part, I would say people really care a lot about our community members and step up when, you know, folks are in need and such. And so there is an extremely strong sense of community where folks, maybe when they're done with school, they leave for a little while. I mean, it's amazing how many people come back and live in our community to raise their children, because mm-hmm. there is a small town feel to Hastings, which is, you know, relatively a larger community of about 26,000 people. Mm-hmm.
And it's its own town. I mean, it's for many years. I mean, it was well out of the metro area. The metro area's been growing closer to it, but it still is maintained. That's one of the things that's really cute about Hastings, is it still maintains that small town feel, which is really nice. I should mention, you do have the endorsement of the Stonewall DFL. So, you know, that's the kind of leadership we need down there in that district. That's for sure. Looking at your other endorsements, if I may, you got Planned Parenthood endorsed you, Women Winnings endorsed you. I'm going to just get out of the way. Matt Burke, the lieutenant governor candidate, has been saying some pretty inappropriate things here. We've got a war going on right now with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, where women's rights, women's health is now something that Republicans feel as if they can just right away and be done with it. I'm going to let you talk about this and let you say what you have to say, because the reality is it's, you know, we can't have people losing rights. That's not a good thing in this country.
Yeah, it is hard to believe. I'm 51 years old, and within my lifespan, I don't know anything other than, you know, the current, well, what had been, you know, the Supreme Court protecting women's constitutional rights. And so, I'm completely in disbelief. You know, I'm a strong feminist myself. I graduated from the College of St. Catherine in St. Paul. And so I'm just flabbergasted that we've gotten, you know, to this point. And those remarks that were made by the candidate running for lieutenant governor, I had heard them, where he thought, you know, that, geez, those women, what was the statement about women shouldn't be wanting to have careers and all, you know, yeah. And how that was, that was some kind of play into, you know, supporting abortion rights and such. And I didn't even like put how together that whole logic was and all, but it was just, you know, astounding that he would even, you know, say such a thing, that women shouldn't be having, you know, careers of, you know, for their own financial well-being. I mean, it's just unbelievable, and just goes to really to show, you know, how out of touch, you know, the right has, you know, become. You know, the person who I'm running against, unfortunately, has, you know, stated, you know, just statements that have, you know, blown my socks off, you know, where he's, you know, come out and said that, you know, he's the father of four boys, and geez, if he maybe had a girl, you know, and if she was brutally raped, you know, well, maybe I'd want to sit down with my clergy member and we'd perhaps want to have a conversation about, you know, how to proceed if, you know, she was, you know, pregnant. And, you know, and just the fact that they would just consider only in cases of brutal rape. I mean, really, seriously, how out of touch are these folks, where they have so little respect for the dignity of women and what it is that we, you know, go through, and just the fact that if it was any kind of unwanted, you know, touch or rape, that, you know, that it would have to be an extreme case where, you know, and then so let's legally define how it is that, you know, you would have an extreme case of brutal rape, you know, geez, you know, I mean, going into the specifics about what kind of torture would a woman have to go through for her to be able to actually be, get, you know, given the ability to abort a child. And so, you know, it's just unbelievable that these folks care so little about women's well-being, you know, from a healthcare perspective. You know, I was reading, I was surprised it was a good chunk of women who actually have abortions already have, you know, a child. And it's, the decision is rather a financial one where, you know, the time isn't right for them. And so they're, you know, proceeding, you know, to make the healthcare decisions that they need to. And so it is just astounding that we've gotten to this place where individuals who are so narcissistic about their own value systems, you know, that they feel so strongly that and care so little about the plight of women and how it is that, you know, that having reproductive rights, how significant that is in them being able to make, you know, decisions, not just about, you know, their family planning about, but for their financial well-being, you know, for the rest of their lives. Because, you know, heck, the truth is the majority of women who do have unwanted pregnancies and see it to term, they don't give those children up. They keep them because we're all human beings. And how can you not love the child that grows inside of you over time? And so it, and then, so then they're tied to, you know, individuals who, you know, for 18 years, financially and having to share custody with that child, you know, most oftentimes. And so just the life that's being, you know, course, you know, that's put out in front of them, as a result of them not being able to have, you know, a decision about their own, you know, reproductive rights. And so it is a troubling time. And, you know, by golly, you know, it puts a lot of fire in my belly and makes me want to get out there on the doors and do all I can, you know, to fight for women's rights and get elected to our legislature. Because, you know, honestly, it's going to be the Minnesota legislature. It's going to be our governorship that's going to hold the line and keep it as, you know, so women do have this constitutional right within our state to abortion care.
You know, I'm going to say this. This is you, but from your story there, and you're talking about your opponent talking about if his daughter was violently attacked, he'd go talk to the clergy. Just as me, as a dad, actually with two daughters, maybe you should talk to your daughter. How about that first before you go talk to the clergy? Maybe if your daughter was violently attacked, you might want to talk to her first and see how she's doing before you start going and allowing others. But that's just me. That's just me. I heaven forbid, I just, you know, maybe you take care of the individual who is attacked. But that's just me. All right. I want to touch on another issue. You had mentioned this. I'm very glad Joe Biden, this new infrastructure bill, we've got money coming into the state for broadband. Broadband, Hastings is a perfect template of why we need to fight for broadband. This is not some, you know, up by Crane Lake on the northern border. This is a city by a large metro area. There are parts of the county, parts of the area out there that don't have good access to internet. This is something we're getting fixed right now. Talk a little bit about that, because we need that leadership, not just for, say, 41B, but for the entire state, that broadband is an important basic infrastructure element at this point.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah, Hastings is interesting that within the city limits that we do have fiber that's laid, but really, it's just, you know, confined to the city limits. And so the townships that surround our community, they do not have fiber. They don't have cable. And so, so yes, you know, I mean, it became quite evident, you know, during the pandemic where, you know, where it and I'm sure all communities had, you know, similar situations that are outside of, you know, the core metro where they had sections of their school district where kiddos didn't have internet, they didn't have fiber, they didn't have good connectivity to be able to, you know, do their coursework. And then, you know, furthermore, you know, the business community is also saying that it's such a need for their employees to be able to have the ability to work from home, you know, if need be, and be, you know, connected. And so from the perspective of being able to support students and being able to, you know, support businesses with, you know, their employees and families being able to do what they need to do on the internet is extremely important. And so so for me, I actually, you know, if I was just wearing that city council member hat, I wouldn't have, you know, bothered, you know, to be within the broadband board because of, because yeah, Hastings is well connected inside of the city limits. But geez, you know, as a parent who's had two children, you know, graduate, you know, in the last couple of years from our high school and just being so connected, you know, to, understanding, you know, the needs of our school system and having those conversations with our school board members and such. but how important it is for all of our rural areas to be connected. And so that's why I've stepped up. I've been serving, this is my fourth year on the Dakota Broadband Board, and I can tell you it has been extremely challenging. About a year and a half ago, we had some three key positions that are memberships. You know, so what it is, it's a joint powers initiative between the Dakota County and then the it's about, I think it's 9 or 10 of the cities, you know, the large cities in Dakota County, where we came together and we decided to merge all of our fiber assets so that they could be better managed overall, you know, and locates being done for utilities and having an outside firm, you know, manage all of the construction projects around them and such, and then so that we had redundancy for a business continuity perspective. So that it was really an operational standpoint that we came together. But everyone who originally was on the group when we began, we all fully understood the importance of making sure that we were striving forward to provide fiber connectivity to our residents, to our business sectors, you know, that didn't currently have it. And like, that was a long-term goal. And so, unfortunately, about a year and a half ago, as I was beginning to say, is that we had three key individuals, that came onto the board and, who have to be Republican leaning because they have been against wholeheartedly even having the broadband board, be in existence, and they've been, fighting and, I want to say, weaseling their way into completely dissolving the group. And so they are our county board member, and then also two individuals from two of the key cities, Burnsville and Lakeville, who have they've destroyed the Dakota Broadband Board and all of the good that we could be doing for our community. It's currently beginning to dissolve because of a few key individuals who do not want to see fiber access as a goal and the government having any kind of coordination with the private sector and expanding the network to other parts of our county. And so it's very disheartening, and it really goes to show that folks should be super paying attention to who it is that they're electing to represent them, because, you know, there's a lot of folks who do get elected and they're not there. They're not serving the needs of the greater good. They're serving an agenda of a small subset of, you know, of whatever community, be it the, you know, the corporations, the big cell phone companies, the big, you know, the big groups, corporations like, you know, oh, I shouldn't name names, and so I'm not going to do that. But
it'd be like today denying electricity or denying mail service to a residential neighborhood. I mean, it's such a basic tenet. And the reality is, you're exactly right. If you don't pay attention to these things, you're going to get people in there that are going to have an agenda that are going to be like, no, we're not going to do this. And by the way, if the private sector was doing it correctly, the government wouldn't have to step in at this point. That's the problem, is the fact that you guys, the private sector hasn't done it. And yet, so the argument is like, well, the private sector will do it. It's like, no, they're not. And that's just the case. I mean, it was, exactly. Tina, you and I could talk all day. You're a hoot. I like you. 41B, I want to get people down there. Once again, this is Hastings. This is a seat that the Republicans are going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at. The DFL can pick this seat up. It is a good seat. It's a good area, the metro area for the DFL. I want to drive people down to your campaign website so they can volunteer and donate. Tina, how do they do that? Where do they find your webpage?
Oh, thanks for asking that question. Yes. So go to tinafolch.com. That's Tina, T-I-N-A, and then Folch is F-O-L-C-H. And then .com. And I actually am so proud of our website. I have the best webmaster a gal could ask for. We have lots of information on there. And so it's easy to find, you know, the donate button, but then also to sign up for, if you'd like to get involved in the campaign, be it, you know, door knocking or doing lit drops, taking a yard sign, you know, those kinds of activities. But really, you know, I mean, you're totally right. This seat is flippable. It's been held by the Republicans for the past 40 years. We have never had a woman as our House rep at the Capitol to represent this area here. And so I think that we're prime. It's, you know, I think that there's enough folks who are, you know, fired up about all of the divisive nature of, you know, the right-wing rhetoric that we're seeing. And then furthermore, I don't know if folks have realized that out in this neck of the woods, the extreme right has taken over the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Even moderate Republicans have lost their incumbent moderate Republicans have lost the endorsement of the Republican Party, and you know they're on the primaries, and so we'll see how they end up faring, you know, going through the primary process. But it's very likely that those far right candidates, all of them, will see it through and make it to Election Day.
If you are in a district that's a relatively safe DFL seat, help your local DFLer, but then get down to 41B. Tina Fulch, that's TinaFulch.com, TinaFolch.com. Tina, I really appreciate the time. Thanks for being the Democrat of the Day today, okay?
Awesome. Thanks again. Hope you have a great day. Take care, everyone.
All righty. We'll take a break, wrap up the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Oh, I like Tina Fulch. She's got a lot to say, and she's got a lot of good campaign points. TinaFulch.com, Democrat of the Day. One quick little last story here. One American News host, Christina Bob, emailed several Donald Trump campaign aides the day before electors gathered to cast their state's presidential votes with a detailed plan to send false electors to state legislators. Politico obtained the December 13th email sent to Rudy Giuliani, senior campaign official and attorney Boris Epstein, Jenna Ellis, Joe DiGiovanna, Victoria Tonzing, and many others. Needless to say, here you have an actual member of OAN now actually coordinating the attempts to overthrow the government of the United States. I actually think she still is employed by OAN, too, by the way. Just FYI. Just gives you an idea of where this whole thing's going. Enjoy the January 6th hearing tonight. We'll have a lot to say about those tomorrow. Ryan Winkler is going to be joining us as well tomorrow. Have a good one. We are back then. Till then. See ya.